and other intelligence that oftentimes is incomplete or wrong. When the detainee does not respond to the question, the assumption at headquarters is that the detainee is holding back and knows more, and consequently, headquarters recommends resumption of EITs. This difference of opinion between the interrogators and headquarters as to whether the detainee is compliant is the type of ongoing pressure the interrogation team is exposed to. Redacted believes the waterboard was used recklessly, too many times on Abu Zubaydah, at Detention Site Green, based in part on faulty intelligence. One senior interrogator, Redacted, informed the OIG that differences between CIA headquarters and the interrogators at the CIA detention sites were not part of the official record. According to Redacted, all of the fighting and criticism is done over the phone and is not put into cables, and that CIA cables reflect things that are all rosy. As is described elsewhere and reflected in the final OIG special review, CIA officers discussed numerous other topics with the OIG, including conditions at detention site Cobalt, specific interrogations, the videotaping of interrogations, the administration of the program, and concerns about the lack of an endgame for CIA detainees, as well as the impact of possible public revelations concerning the existence and operation of the CIA's detention and interrogation program.
Note, 727. DDO Pavitt described possible public revelations related to the CIA's detention and interrogation program as the CIA's worst nightmare. Interview of James Pavitt, Office of the Inspector General, September 21, 2003. According to OIG records of an interview with DCI Tenet, Tenet believes that if the general public were to find out about this program, many would believe we are torturers. Tenet added, however, that his only potential moral dilemma would be if more Americans die at the hands of terrorists and we had someone in our custody who possessed information that could have prevented deaths, but we had not obtained such information.
In January 2004, the CIA Inspector General circulated for comment to various offices within the CIA a draft of the OIG Special Review of the CIA's Detention and Interrogation Program. Among other matters, the OIG Special Review described divergences between the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques as applied and as described to the Department of Justice in 2002, the use of unauthorized techniques and oversight problems related to detention site Cobalt. The draft OIG Special Review elicited responses from the CIA's Deputy Director for Operations, the Deputy Director for Science and Technology, the Office of General Counsel, and the Office of Medical Services. Several of the responses, particularly those from CIA General Counsel Scott Mueller and CIA Deputy Director for Operations James Pavitt, were highly critical of the Inspector General's draft special review. General Counsel Mueller wrote that the OIG special review presented an imbalanced and inaccurate picture of the counterterrorism detention and interrogation program and claimed the OIG special review, on occasion, quoted or summarized selectively and misleadingly from CIA documents. Deputy Director for Operations James Pavitt wrote that the OIG Special Review should have come to the conclusion that our efforts have thwarted attacks and saved lives, and that EITs, including the waterboard, have been indispensable to our successes. Pavitt attached to his response a document describing information the CIA obtained as a result of the lawful use of EITs that stated, "The evidence points clearly to the fact that without the use of such techniques, we and our allies would have suffered major terrorist attacks involving hundreds, if not thousands, of casualties." A review of CIA records found that the representations in the Pavitt materials were almost entirely inaccurate. In addition to conveying inaccurate information on the operation, management, and effectiveness of the CIA program, CIA leadership continued to impede the OIG in its efforts to oversee the program. In July 2005, Director Goss sent a memorandum to the Inspector General to express several concerns regarding the in-depth, multifaceted review of the CIA's CTC. The CIA director wrote that he was increasingly concerned about the cumulative impact of the OIG's work on CTC's performance, adding that, "I believe it makes sense to complete existing reviews before opening new ones." Director Goss added, To my knowledge, Congress is satisfied that you are meeting its requirements with regard to the CIA's detention and interrogation program. At the time, however, the vice chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence was seeking a committee investigation of the CIA program, in part because of the aspects of the program that were not being investigated by the Office of Inspector General. In April 2007, CIA Director Michael Hayden had his senior counselor, an individual within the CIA who was accountable only to the CIA director, conduct a review of the Inspector General's practices. Defending the decision to review the OIG, the CIA told the committee that there were morale issues that the CIA director needs to be mindful of, and that the review had uncovered instances of bias among OIG personnel against the CIA's detention and interrogation program. In 2008, the CIA director announced the results of his review of the OIG to the CIA workforce and stated that the Inspector General had chosen to take a number of steps to heighten the efficiency, assure the quality, and increase the transparency of the investigative process. 3. The CIA does not satisfy Inspector General's special review recommendation to assess the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The final May 2004 OIG special review included a recommendation that the CIA's DDO conduct a study of the effectiveness of the CIA's interrogation techniques within 90 days. Prompted by the recommendation, the CIA tasked two senior CIA officers to lead an informal operational assessment of the CIA detainee program. The reviewers were tasked with responding to 12 specific terms of reference, including an assessment of the effectiveness of each interrogation technique and environmental deprivation to determine if any techniques or deprivation should be added, modified, or discontinued. According to a CIA memorandum from the reviewers, their review was based on briefings by CTC personnel, a discussion with three senior CTC managers who played key roles in running the CIA detainee program, and a review of 9 documents, including the OIG special review and an article by the CIA contractors who developed the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, Hammond Dunbar and Grayson Swigert.
Note, 736. The CIA's June 2013 response states, "We acknowledge that the agency erred in permitting the contractors to assess the effectiveness of enhanced techniques. They should not have been considered for such a role given their financial interest in continued contracts from CIA."
As described in this summary and in more detail in Volume 2, these documents contained numerous inaccurate representations regarding the operation and effectiveness of the CIA program. There are no records to indicate the two senior CIA officers reviewed the underlying interrogation cables and intelligence records related to the representations. Their resulting assessment repeated information found in the documents provided to them and reported that the CIA detainee program is a success, providing unique and valuable intelligence at the tactical level for the benefit of policymakers, warfighters, and the CIA's covert action operators. The assessment also reported that regulations and procedures for handling detainees were adequate and clear, and that the program had responded swiftly, fairly, and completely to deviations from the structured program. Nonetheless, the assessment came to the conclusion that detention and interrogations activity should not be conducted by the CIA, but by experienced U.S. law enforcement officers, stating, "The Directorate of Operations, DO, should not be in the business of running prisons or temporary detention facilities. The DO should focus on its core mission, clandestine intelligence operations. Accordingly, the DO should continue to hunt, capture, and render targets, and then exploit them for intelligence and ops leads once in custody. The management of their incarceration and interrogation should be conducted by appropriately experienced U.S. law enforcement officers, because that is their charter and they have the training and experience." The assessment noted that the CIA program required significant resources at a time when the CIA was already stretched thin. Finally, the authors wrote that they strongly believe that the president and congressional oversight members should receive a comprehensive update on the program, given the intense interest and controversy surrounding the detainee issue. On January 26, 2005, DCI Goss forwarded the senior officer review to Inspector General John Helgerson. The DCI asked whether the review would satisfy the Inspector General recommendation for an independent review of the program. On January 28, 2005, The Inspector General responded that the senior officer review would not satisfy the recommendation for an independent review. The Inspector General also responded to a concern raised by Redacted, OMS, that studying the results of CIA interrogations would amount to human experimentation, stating, "I fear there was a misunderstanding. OIG did not have in mind doing additional guinea pig research on human beings. What we are recommending is that the agency undertake a careful review of its experience to date in using the various techniques and that it draw conclusions about their safety, effectiveness, etc., that can guide CIA officers as we move ahead. We make this recommendation because we have found that the agency over the decades has continued to get itself in messes related to interrogation programs for one overriding reason. We do not document and learn from our experience. Each generation of officers is left to improvise anew, with problematic results for our officers as individuals and for our agency. We are not unaware that there are subtleties to this matter, as the effectiveness of techniques varies among individuals over time as administered in combination with one another and so on. All the more reason to document these important findings."
Note 743. The CIA's June 2013 response maintains that a systematic study over time of the effectiveness of the techniques would have been encumbered by a number of factors, including federal policy on the protection of human subjects and the impracticability of establishing an effective control group.
In November and December 2004, the CIA responded to National Security Advisor Rice's questions about the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques by asserting that an effectiveness review was not possible, while highlighting examples of key intelligence the CIA represented was obtained after the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The December 2004 memorandum prepared for the National Security Advisor entitled "Effectiveness of the CIA Counter-Terrorist Interrogation Techniques" begins, "Action requested, none." This memorandum responds to your request for an independent study of the foreign intelligence efficacy of using enhanced interrogation techniques. There is no way to conduct such a study. What we can do, however, is set forth below the intelligence the agency obtained from detainees who, before their interrogations, were not providing any information of intelligence value. Under a section of the memorandum entitled "Results," the CIA memo asserts that the CIA's use of DOJ-approved enhanced interrogation techniques as part of a comprehensive interrogation approach has enabled CIA to disrupt terrorist plots and capture additional terrorists. The memorandum then lists examples of key intelligence collected from HVD interrogations after applying interrogation techniques, which led to disrupted terrorist plots and the capture of additional terrorists. The examples include the Karachi plot, the Heathrow plot, the second wave plotting, the identification of the Guraba cell, the identification of Issa al-Hindi, the arrest of Abu Talha al-Pakistani, Hanbali's capture, information on Jafar al-Tayyar, the dirty bomb plot, the arrest of Sajid Badat, and information on Shkai, Pakistan. CIA records do not indicate when or if this memorandum was provided to the National Security Advisor. A subsequent CIA memorandum, dated March 5, 2005, concerning an upcoming meeting between the CIA Director and the National Security Advisor on the CIA's progress in completing the OIG's recommended review of the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation technique, states, "We, CIA, believe this study is much needed and should be headed up by highly respected national-level political figures with widely recognized reputations for independence and fairness." On March 21, 2005, the director of the CTC formally proposed the establishment of an independent Blue Ribbon Commission with a charter to study our EITs. The CIA then began the process of establishing a panel that included Redacted and Redacted. Both panelists received briefings and papers from CIA personnel who participated in the CIA's detention and interrogation program. Redacted, the first panelist, wrote, "It is clear from our discussions with both the DO and DI officers that the program is deemed by them to be a great success, and I would concur. The EITs, as part of the overall program, are credited with enabling the U.S. to disrupt terrorist plots, capture additional terrorists, and collect a high volume of useful intelligence on Al-Qaeda. There are accounts of numerous plots against the U.S. and the West that were revealed as a result of HVD interrogations. He also observed, however, that neither my background nor field of expertise particularly lend themselves to judging the effectiveness of interrogation techniques taken individually or collectively. Redacted, the second panelist, concluded that there is no objective way to answer the question of efficacy, but stated it was possible to make some general observations about the program based on CIA personnel assessments of the quality of the intelligence provided by CIA detainees. Regarding the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, he wrote, "Here enters the epistemological problem. We can never know whether or not this intelligence could have been extracted through alternative procedures. Spokesmen from within the organization firmly believe it could not have been." 4. The CIA wrongfully detains Khalid al-Masri. CIA director rejects accountability for officer involved. After the dissemination of the draft CIA Inspector General Special Review in early 2004, approvals from CIA headquarters to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques adhered more closely to the language of the DCI guidelines. Nonetheless, CIA records indicate that officers at CIA headquarters continued to fail to properly monitor justifications for the capture and detention of detainees, as well as the justification for the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on particular detainees. For example, in January 2004, the CIA rendered German citizen Khalid al-Masri to a country redacted facility used by the CIA for detention purposes. The rendition was based on the determination by officers in the CIA's Alex station that al-Masri knows key information that could assist in the capture of other al-Qaeda operatives that pose a serious threat of violence or death to U.S. persons and interests and who may be planning terrorist activities. The cable did not state that Khalid al-Masri himself posed a serious threat of violence or death, the standard required for detention under the September 17, 2001 Memorandum of Notification, MON. CIA debriefing cables from country redacted on January 27, 2004 and January 28, 2004 note that Khalid al-Masri seemed bewildered on why he has been sent to this particular prison and was adamant that CIA has the wrong person. Despite doubts from CIA officers in country redacted about Khalid al-Masri's links to terrorists and RDG's concurrence with those doubts, different components within the CIA disagreed on the process for his release. As later described by the CIA Inspector General, officers in Alex Station continued to think that releasing Khalid al-Masri would pose a threat to U.S. interests and that monitoring should be required, while those in the CIA's redacted division did not want to notify the German government about the rendition of a German citizen. Because of the significance of the dispute, the National Security Council settled the matter, concluding that al-Masri should be repatriated and that the Germans should be told about al-Masri's rendition. In May 2004, Khalid al-Masri was transferred from country redacted to redacted. After al-Masri arrived in redacted, CIA officers released him and sent him toward a fake border crossing where the officers told him he would be sent back to Germany because he had entered redacted illegally. At the time of his release, al-Masri was provided 14,500 euros as well as his belongings. On July 16, 2007, the CIA Inspector General issued a report of investigation on the rendition and detention of Khalid al-Masri, concluding that available intelligence information did not provide a sufficient basis to render and detain Khalid al-Masri, and that the agency's prolonged detention of al-Masri was unjustified. On October 9, 2007, the CIA informed the committee that it lacked sufficient basis to render and detain al-Masri, and that the judgment by operations officers that al-Masri was associated with terrorists who posed a threat to U.S. interests was not supported by available intelligence. The CIA director nonetheless decided that no further action was warranted against Redacted, then the deputy chief of Alex Station, who advocated for al-Masri's rendition because the director strongly believes that mistakes should be expected in a business filled with uncertainty and that when they result from performance that meets reasonable standards, CIA leadership must stand behind the officers who make them. The notification also stated that with regard to counterterrorism operations in general, and the al-Masri matter in particular, the director believes the scale tips decisively in favor of accepting mistakes that overconnect the dots against those that underconnect them. 5. Hassan Gul provides substantial information, including information on a key UBL facilitator prior to the CIA's use of enhanced interrogation techniques. Redacted foreign authorities captured Hassan Gul in the Iraqi Kurdistan region in January 2004. After his identity was confirmed in January 2004, Gul was rendered from U.S. military custody to CIA custody at detention site Cobalt in January 2004. The detention site interrogators, who, according to CIA records, did not use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Gul, sent at least 21 intelligence reports to CIA headquarters based on their debriefings of Hassan Gul from the 2 days he spent at the facility. As detailed in this summary and in greater detail in Volume 2, CIA records indicate that the most accurate CIA detainee reporting on the facilitator who led to Osama bin Laden was acquired from Hassan Gul prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques.
Note, 767. As the dissemination of 21 intelligence reports suggests, information in CIA records indicates Hassan Gul was cooperative prior to being subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. In an interview with the CIA Office of Inspector General, a CIA officer familiar with Gul's initial interrogations stated, "He sang like a Tweety bird. He opened up right away and was cooperative from the outset." CIA records reveal that Gul's information on Abu Ahmad al-Kuwaiti was disseminated while Gul was at detention site Cobalt prior to the initiation of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. On April 16, 2013, the Council on Foreign Relations hosted a forum in relation to the screening of the film Manhunt. The forum included former CIA officer Nada Bakos, who states in the film that Hassan Gul provided the critical information on Abu Ahmad al-Kuwaiti to Kurdish officials prior to entering CIA custody. When asked about the interrogation techniques used by the Kurds, Bakos stated, "Honestly, Hassan Gul, when he was being debriefed by the Kurdish government, he literally was sitting there having tea. He was in a safe house. He wasn't locked up in a cell. He wasn't handcuffed to anything. He was having a free-flowing conversation." And there's articles in Kurdish papers about sort of their interpretation of this story and how forthcoming he was. Given the unusually high number of intelligence reports disseminated in such a short time period, and the statements of former CIA officer Bakos, the committee requested additional information from the CIA on Gul's interrogation prior to entering CIA custody. The CIA wrote on October 25, 2013, "We have not identified any information in our holdings suggesting that Hassan Gul first provided information on Abu Ahmad while in foreign custody. No information was provided on Hassan Gul's intelligence reporting while in U.S. military detention."
Gul speculated that bin Laden was likely living in the Peshawar area and that it was well known that he was always with Abu Ahmad al-Kuwaiti. Gul described Abu Ahmad al-Kuwaiti as bin Laden's closest assistant, who couriered messages to al-Qaeda's chief of operations and listed al-Kuwaiti as one of three individuals likely with bin Laden. Gul further speculated that bin Laden's security apparatus would be minimal and that the group likely lived in a house with a family somewhere in Pakistan. Gul speculated that Abu Ahmad likely handled all of bin Laden's needs, including moving messages out to Abu Faraj al-Libi. During this same period, prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, Gul provided information related to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, Abu Faraj al-Libi, including his role in delivering messages from bin Laden, Jafar al-Tayyar, Abd al-Hadi al-Araki, Hamza Rabia, Shaikh Said al-Masri, Sharif al-Masri, Abu Abd al-Rahman al-Najdi, Abu Tala al-Pakistani, and numerous other al-Qaeda operatives. He also provided information on the locations, movements, operational security, and training of al-Qaeda leaders living in Shkai, Pakistan, as well as on the visits of other leaders and operatives to Shkai. Gul's reporting on Shkai, which was included in at least 16 of the 21 intelligence reports, confirmed earlier reporting that the Shkai Valley served as al-Qaeda's command and control center after the group's 2001 exodus from Afghanistan. Notwithstanding these facts, in March 2005, the CIA represented to the Department of Justice that Hassan Gul's reporting on Shkai was acquired after the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. After 2 days of questioning at detention site Cobalt and the dissemination of 21 intelligence reports, Gul was transferred to detention site Black. According to CIA records, upon arrival, Gul was shaved and barbered, stripped and placed in a standing position against the wall with his hands above his head, with plans to lower his hands after 2 hours. The CIA interrogators at the detention site then requested to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Gul, writing, "The interrogation team believes, based on Hassan Gul's reaction to the initial contact, that his Al-Qaeda briefings and his earlier experiences with U.S. military interrogators have convinced him there are limits to the physical contact interrogators can have with him. The interrogation team believes the approval and employment of enhanced measures should sufficiently shift Hassan Gul's paradigm of what he expects to happen. The lack of these increased measures may limit the team's capability to collect critical and reliable information in a timely manner." CIA headquarters approved the request the same day. Following 59 hours of sleep deprivation, Hassan Gul experienced hallucinations, but was told by a psychologist that his reactions were consistent with what many others experience in his condition, and that he should calm himself by telling himself his experiences are normal and will subside when he decides to be truthful. The sleep deprivation, as well as other enhanced interrogations, continued, as did Gul's hallucinations. Gul also complained of back pain and asked to see a doctor, but interrogators responded that the pain was normal and would stop when Gul was confirmed as telling the truth. A cable states that interrogators told Gul they did not care if he was in pain, but cared only if he provided complete and truthful information. A CIA physician assistant later observed that Hassan Gul was experiencing notable physiological fatigue, including abdominal and back muscle pain spasm, heaviness, and mild paralysis of arms, legs, and feet that are secondary to his hanging position, an extreme degree of sleep deprivation, but that Gul was clinically stable and had essentially normal vital signs, despite an occasional premature heartbeat that the cable linked to Gul's fatigue. Throughout this period, Gul provided no actionable threat information. And as detailed later in the summary, much of his reporting on the Al-Qaeda presence in Shkai was repetitive of his reporting prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Gul also provided no other information of substance on bin Laden's facilitator, Abu Ahmad al-Kuwaiti. Nonetheless, on May 5, 2011, the CIA provided a document to the committee entitled "Detainee Reporting on Abu Ahmad al-Kuwaiti," which lists Hassan Gul as a CIA detainee who was subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques and who provided Tier 1 information linking Abu Ahmad to bin Laden. Hassan Gul was redacted and later released. 6. Other detainees wrongfully held in 2004, CIA sources subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, CIA officer testifies that the CIA is not authorized to do anything like what you have seen in Abu Ghraib photographs. In March 2004, the CIA took custody of an Afghan national who had sought employment at a U.S. military base because he had the same name, Gul Rahman, as an individual believed to be targeting U.S. military forces in Afghanistan. During the period in which the Afghan was detained, the CIA obtained signals intelligence of their true target communicating with his associates. DNA results later showed conclusively that the Afghan in custody was not the target. Nonetheless, the CIA held the detainee in solitary confinement for approximately a month before he was released with a nominal payment. In the spring of 2004, after two detainees were transferred to CIA custody, CIA interrogators proposed, and CIA headquarters approved, using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on one of the two detainees because it might cause the detainee to provide information that could identify inconsistencies in the other detainee's story. After both detainees had spent approximately 24 hours shackled in the standing sleep deprivation position, CIA headquarters confirmed that the detainees were former CIA sources. The two detainees had tried to contact the CIA on multiple occasions prior to their detention to inform the CIA of their activities and provide intelligence. The messages they had sent to the CIA, redacted, were not translated until after the detainees were subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. During this same period in early 2004, CIA interrogators interrogated Adnan al-Libi, a member of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. CIA headquarters did not approve the use of the CIA's enhanced techniques against al-Libi, but indicated that interrogators could use standard interrogation techniques, which included up to 48 hours of sleep deprivation. CIA interrogators subsequently reported subjecting Adnan al-Libi to sleep deprivation sessions of 46.5 hours, 24 hours, and 48 hours, with a combined 3 hours of sleep between sessions.
Note, 796. In November 2003, CIA General Counsel Scott Mueller sent an email to Redacted suggesting changing the sleep deprivation line as between enhanced and standard from 72 to 48 hours. On January 10, 2004, CIA headquarters informed CIA detention sites of the change, stating that sleep deprivation over 48 hours would now be considered an enhanced interrogation technique.
Beginning in late April 2004, a number of media outlets published photographs of detainee abuse at the Department of Defense-run Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. The media reports caused members of the committee and individuals in the executive branch to focus on detainee issues. On May 12, 2004, the committee held a lengthy hearing on detainee issues with Department of Defense and CIA witnesses. The CIA used the Abu Ghraib abuses as a contrasting reference point for its detention and interrogation activities. In a response to a question from a committee member, CIA Deputy Director McLaughlin said, "We are not authorized in the CIA program to do anything like what you have seen in those photographs." In response, a member of the committee said, "I understand," and expressed the understanding, consistent with past CIA briefings to the committee, that the norm of CIA's interrogations was transparent law enforcement procedures that had developed to such a high level that you could get pretty much what you wanted. The CIA did not correct the committee members' misunderstanding that CIA interrogation techniques were similar to techniques used by U.S. law enforcement. 7. The CIA suspends the use of its enhanced interrogation techniques, resumes use of the techniques on an individual basis. Interrogations are based on fabricated, single-source information. In May 2004, the OLC, then led by Assistant Attorney General Jack Goldsmith, informed the CIA's Office of General Counsel that it had never formally opined on whether the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques in the CIA's program was consistent with U.S. constitutional standards. Goldsmith also raised concerns about divergences between the CIA's proposed enhanced interrogation techniques, as described in the August 1, 2002 memorandum, and their actual application, as described in the CIA Inspector General's special review. In late May 2004, DCI Tenet suspended the use of the CIA's enhanced and standard interrogation techniques pending updated approvals from the OLC. On June 4, 2004, DCI Tenet issued a formal memorandum suspending the use of the CIA's interrogation techniques pending policy and legal review. The same day, the CIA sought reaffirmation of the program from the National Security Council. National Security Advisor Rice responded, noting that the next logical step is for the Attorney General to complete the relevant legal analysis now in preparation. In June 2004, a foreign government captured Jannat Gul, an individual believed based on reporting from a CIA source to have information about al-Qaeda plans to attack the United States prior to the 2004 presidential election. In October 2004, the CIA source who provided the information on the pre-election threat and implicated Gul and others admitted to fabricating the information. However, as early as March 2004, CIA officials internally expressed doubts about the validity of the CIA source's information. On July 2, 2004, the CIA met with National Security Advisor Rice, other National Security Council officials, White House Counsel Alberto Gonzalez, as well as the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General to seek authorization to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, specifically on Jannat Gul. The CIA represented that CIA interrogations have saved American lives, that more than half of the CIA detainees would not cooperate until they were interrogated using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, and that unless CIA interrogators can use a full range of enhanced interrogation methods, it is unlikely that CIA will be able to obtain current threat information from Gul in a timely manner. Jannat Gul was not yet in CIA custody. On July 6, 2004, National Security Advisor Rice sent a memorandum to DCI Tenet stating that the CIA was permitted to use previously approved enhanced interrogation methods for Jannat Gul, with the exception of the Water Board. Rice offered to assist the CIA in obtaining additional guidance from the Attorney General and NSC principals on an expedited basis, and noted the CIA's agreement to provide additional information about the Water Board technique in order for the Department of Justice to assess its legality. Rice's memorandum further documented that the CIA had informed her that Gul likely has information about pre-election terrorist attacks against the United States as a result of Gul's close ties to individuals involved in these alleged plots. In a meeting on July 20, 2004, National Security Council principals, including the vice president, provided their authorization for the CIA to use its enhanced interrogation techniques, again with the exception of the Water Board, on Jannat Gul. They also directed the Department of Justice to prepare a legal opinion on whether the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were consistent with the 5th and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. On July 22, 2004, Attorney General John Ashcroft sent a letter to Acting DCI John McLaughlin stating that 9 interrogation techniques, those addressed in the August 1, 2002 memorandum with the exception of the Water Board, did not violate the U.S. Constitution or any statute or U.S. treaty obligations in the context of the interrogation of Jannat Gul. For the remainder of 2004, the CIA used its enhanced interrogation techniques on 3 detainees, Jannat Gul, Sharif Al-Masri, and Ahmed Khalfan Gailani, with individualized approval from the Department of Justice. After being rendered to CIA custody in July 2004, Jannat Gul was subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, including continuous sleep deprivation, facial holds, attention grasps, facial slaps, stress positions, and walling, until he experienced auditory and visual hallucinations. According to a cable, Jannat Gul was not oriented to time or place, and told CIA officers that he saw his wife and children in the mirror and had heard their voices in the white noise. The questioning of Jannat Gul continued, although the CIA ceased using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques for several days. According to a CIA cable, Gul asked to die, or just be killed. After continued interrogation sessions with Gul, on August 19, 2004, CIA detention site personnel wrote that the interrogation team does not believe Gul is withholding imminent threat information. On August 21, 2004, a cable from CIA headquarters stated that Jannat Gul is believed to possess threat information and that the use of enhanced techniques is appropriate in order to obtain that information. On that day, August 21, 2004, CIA interrogators resumed using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Gul. Gul continued not to provide any reporting on the pre-election threat described by the CIA source. On August 25, 2004, CIA interrogators sent a cable to CIA headquarters stating that Jannat Gul may not possess all that the CIA believes him to know. The interrogators added that many issues linking Gul to al-Qaeda are derived from single-source reporting, the CIA source. Nonetheless, CIA interrogators continued to question Gul on the pre-election threat. According to an August 26, 2004 cable, after a 47-hour session of standing sleep deprivation, Jannat Gul was returned to a cell, allowed to remove his diaper, given a towel and a meal, and permitted to sleep. In October 2004, the CIA conducted a redacted of the CIA source who had identified Gul as having knowledge of attack planning for the pre-election threat. Redacted, the CIA source admitted to fabricating the information. Gul was subsequently transferred to a foreign government. On redacted, informed the CIA that Jannat Gul had been released. Jannat Gul never provided the threat information the CIA originally told the National Security Council that Gul possessed. Nor did the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Gul produce the immediate threat information that could save American lives, which had been the basis for the CIA to seek authorization to use the techniques. As described elsewhere in this summary, the CIA's justification for employing its enhanced interrogation techniques on Jannat Gul the first detainee to be subjected to the techniques following the May 2004 suspension, changed over time. After having initially cited Gould's knowledge of the pre-election threat as reported by the CIA's source, the CIA began representing that its enhanced interrogation techniques were required for Gould to deny the existence of the threat, thereby disproving the credibility of the CIA source. On August 11, 2004, in the midst of the interrogation of Jannat Gul using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, CIA attorney, redacted, wrote a letter to acting assistant attorney General Dan Levin with brief biographies of four individuals whom the CIA hoped to detain. Given the requirement at the time that the CIA seek individual approval from the Department of Justice before using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against a detainee, the CIA letter states, "We are providing these preliminary biographies in preparation for a future request for a legal opinion on their subsequent interrogation in CIA control. Two of the individuals, Abu Faraj al-Libi and Hamza Rabia, had not yet been captured, and thus the biographies made no reference to their interrogations or the need to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The third individual, Abu Tala al-Pakistani, was in foreign government custody. His debriefings by a foreign government, redacted, were described in the letter as only moderately effective because Abu Tala was distracting those questioning him with non-critical information that is truthful but is not related to operational planning. The fourth individual, Ahmed Khalfan Gailani, was also in foreign government custody and being debriefed by foreign government officials, redacted. According to the letter, Gailani's foreign government debriefings were ineffective because Gailani had denied knowledge of current threats. The letter described reporting on the pre-election threat, much of which came from the CIA source, in the context of all four individuals. Ahmed Gailani and Abu Faraj al-Libi were eventually rendered to CIA custody and subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. In September 2004, after the CIA had initiated a counterintelligence review of the CIA source who had reported on the pre-election threat, but prior to the CIA's sources redacted, the CIA took custody of Sharif al-Masri, whom the CIA source had reported would also have information about the threat. Intelligence provided by Sharif al-Masri while he was in foreign government custody resulted in the dissemination of more than 30 CIA intelligence reports. After entering CIA custody, Sharif al-Masri expressed his intent to cooperate with the CIA, indicating that he was frightened of interrogations because he had been tortured while being interrogated in redacted. The CIA nonetheless sought approval to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against al-Masri because of his failure to provide information on the pre-election threat. After approximately a week of interrogating al-Masri using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, including sleep deprivation that coincided with auditory hallucinations, CIA interrogators reported that al-Masri had been motivated to participate at the time of his arrival. Despite al-Masri's repeated descriptions of torture in redacted, the CIA transferred al-Masri to that government's custody after approximately 3 months of CIA detention. As in the case of Jannat Gul and Sharif al-Masri, the CIA's requests for OLC advice on the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Ahmed Khalfan Gailani were based on the fabricated reporting on the pre-election threat from the same CIA source. Like Jannat Gul and Sharif al-Masri, Gailani also experienced auditory hallucinations following sleep deprivation. As described in this summary, after having opined on the legality of using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on these three individual detainees, the OLC did not opine again on the CIA's enhanced interrogation program until May 2005. 8. Country redacted detains individuals on the CIA's behalf. Consideration of a detention facility in country redacted began in 2003 when the CIA sought to transfer Ramzi bin al-Shib from the custody of a foreign government to CIA custody. Redacted, which had not yet informed the country's political leadership of the CIA's request to establish a clandestine detention facility in country redacted, surveyed potential sites for the facility while the CIA set aside redacted million for its construction. In 2003, the CIA arranged for a temporary patch involving placing two CIA detainees, Ramzi bin al-Shib and Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri, within an already existing country-redacted detention facility until the CIA's own facility could be built. That spring, as the CIA was offering millions of dollars in subsidies to redacted in countries redacted, redacted, and redacted, CIA headquarters directed the CIA station in country redacted to think big about how CIA headquarters could support country redacted's redacted. CIA headquarters directed the CIA station in country redacted to think big about how CIA headquarters could support country redacted's redacted.
Note, 842. While CIA headquarters offered redacted $1 million to country redacted for hosting a CIA detention facility, redacted precluded the opening of the facility. Only redacted $1 million was made available to the CIA station for support to the redacted, although CIA headquarters asked the CIA station to advise if additional funds may be needed to keep the facility viable over the coming year and beyond. CIA headquarters added, "We cannot have enough black site hosts, and we are loath to let one we have slip away." Country redacted never hosted CIA detainees. Note, 843. In an interview on the CIA program, redacted noted that the program had more money than we could possibly spend, we thought, and it turned out to be accurate. In the same interview, he stated that, in one case, we gave redacted $1 million. Myself and Jose Rodriguez. We never counted it. I'm not about to count that kind of money for a receipt. The boxes contained $100 bills. Redacted did not identify the recipient of the redacted $1 million.
After the station initially submitted relatively modest proposals, CIA headquarters reiterated the directive, adding that the station should provide a wish list. In 2003, the station proposed a more expansive redacted million in subsidies. Subsidy payments intended in part as compensation for support of the CIA detention program rose as high as redacted million. By 2003, after an extension of 5 months beyond the originally agreed-upon timeframe for concluding CIA detention activities in country redacted, both bin al-Shib and al-Nashiri had been transferred out of country redacted to the CIA detention facility at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. 9. U.S. Supreme Court action in the case of Rasul v. Bush forces transfer of CIA detainees from Guantanamo Bay to country redacted. Beginning in September 2003, the CIA held a number of detainees at CIA facilities on the grounds of, but separate from, the U.S. military detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. In early January 2004, the CIA and the Department of Justice began discussing the possibility that a pending U.S. Supreme Court case, Rasul v. Bush, might grant habeas corpus rights to the five CIA detainees then being held at a CIA detention facility at Guantanamo Bay. Shortly after these discussions, CIA officers approached the redacted in country redacted to determine if it would again be willing to host these CIA detainees, who would remain in CIA custody within an already existing country redacted facility. By January 2004, the redacted in country redacted had agreed to this arrangement for a limited period of time. Meanwhile, CIA General Counsel Scott Mueller asked the Department of Justice, the National Security Council, and the White House Counsel for advice on whether the five CIA detainees being held at Guantanamo Bay should remain at Guantanamo Bay or be moved pending the Supreme Court's decision. After consultation with the U.S. Solicitor General in February 2004, the Department of Justice recommended that the CIA move four detainees out of a CIA detention facility at Guantanamo Bay pending the Supreme Court's resolution of the case. The Department of Justice concluded that a fifth detainee, Ibn Sheikh al-Libi, did not need to be transferred because he had originally been detained under military authority and had been declared to the ICRC. Nonetheless, by April 2004, all five CIA detainees were transferred from Guantanamo Bay to other CIA detention facilities. Shortly after placing CIA detainees within an already existing country redacted facility for a second time, tensions arose between the CIA and country redacted. In 2004, CIA detainees in a country redacted facility claim to hear cries of pain from other detainees presumed to be in the redacted facility.
Note, 857. Among the detainees making this claim was Ibn Sheikh al-Libi, who had previously been rendered from CIA custody to redacted. A Libyan national, Ibn Sheikh al-Libi reported while in redacted custody that Iraq was supporting al-Qaeda and providing assistance with chemical and biological weapons. Some of this information was cited by Secretary Powell in his speech to the United Nations and was used as a justification for the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Ibn Sheikh al-Libi recanted the claim after he was rendered to CIA custody on February redacted 2003, claiming that he had been tortured by the redacted and only told them what he assessed they wanted to hear. For more details, see Volume 3. While in country redacted, al-Libi told CIA debriefers that the sobbing and yelling he heard reminded him of what he had previously endured in redacted custody, and it sounded to him like a prisoner had been tied up and beaten.
When the CIA chief of station approached the redacted about the accounts of the CIA detainees, the redacted stated with bitter dismay that the bilateral relationship was being tested. There were also counterintelligence concerns relating to CIA detainee Ramzi bin al-Shib, who had attempted to influence a country redacted officer. These concerns contributed to a request from redacted in 2004 for the CIA to remove all CIA detainees from country redacted. In 2004, when the chief of station in country redacted again approached the redacted with allegations from CIA detainees about the mistreatment of country redacted detainees in the facility, the chief of station received an angry response that, as he reported to CIA headquarters, starkly illustrated the inherent challenges of redacted. According to the chief of station, country redacted saw the CIA as querulous and unappreciative recipients of their cooperation. By the end of 2004, relations between the CIA and country redacted deteriorated, particularly with regard to intelligence cooperation. The CIA detainees were transferred out of country redacted in 2005. Beginning in 2005, the redacted in country redacted insisted over the CIA's opposition to brief country redacted's redacted on the effort to establish a more permanent and unilateral CIA detention facility, which was under construction. A proposed phone call to the redacted from Vice President Cheney to solidify support for CIA operations in country redacted was complicated by the fact that Vice President Cheney had not been told about the locations of the CIA detention facilities. The CIA wrote that there was a primary need to eliminate any possibility that redacted could explicitly or implicitly refer to the existence of a black site in the country during the call with the vice president. There are no indications that the call occurred. The redacted of country redacted nonetheless approved the unilateral CIA detention facility, which cost redacted $1 million but was never used by the CIA. By redacted 2006, the CIA was working with country redacted to decommission what was described as the aborted project. L. The pace of CIA operation slows. Chief of base concerned about inexperienced, marginal, underperforming CIA personnel. Inspector General describes lack of debriefers as ongoing problem. In the fall of 2004, CIA officers began considering endgames, or the final disposition of detainees in CIA custody. A draft CIA presentation for National Security Council principles dated August 19, 2004, identified the drawbacks of ongoing indefinite detention by the CIA, including the need for regular relocation of detainees, the tiny pool of potential host countries available due to high risks, the fact that prolonged detention without legal process increases likelihood of HVD health, psychological problems, and curtails intel flow, criticism of the U.S. government if legal process were delayed or denied, and the likelihood that the delay would complicate and possibly reduce the prospects of successful prosecutions of these detainees. CIA draft talking points produced a month later state that transfer to Department of Defense or Department of Justice custody was the preferred endgame for 13 detainees currently in CIA control, none of whom we believe should ever leave USG custody. By the end of 2004, the overwhelming majority of CIA detainees, 113 of the 119 identified in the committee study, had already entered CIA custody. Most of the detainees remaining in custody were no longer undergoing active interrogations. Rather, they were infrequently questioned and awaiting a final disposition. The CIA took custody of only 6 new detainees between 2005 and January 2009, 4 detainees in 2005, 1 in 2006, and 1, the CIA's final detainee, Mohammed Rahim, in 2007. In 2004, CIA detainees were being held in 3 countries, at Detention Site Black in Country Redacted, at the Redacted Facility Redacted in Country Redacted, as well as at Detention Facilities in Country Redacted. Detention Site Violet in Country Redacted opened in early 2005. On April 15, 2005, the chief of base at Detention Site Black in Country Redacted sent the management of RDG an email expressing his concerns about the detention site and the program in general. He commented that, "We have seen clear indications that various headquarters elements are experiencing mission fatigue vis-a-vis their interaction with the program, resulting in a decline in the overall quality and level of experience of deployed personnel and a decline in level and quality of requirements." He wrote that because of the length of time most of the CIA detainees had been in detention, the detainees have been all but drained of actionable intelligence, and their remaining value was in providing information that can be incorporated into strategic analytical think pieces that deal with motivation, structure, and goals. The chief of base observed that during the course of the year, the detention site transitioned from an intelligence production facility to a long-term detention facility, which raised a host of new challenges. These challenges included the need to address the natural and progressive effects of long-term solitary confinement on detainees and ongoing behavioral problems. With respect to the personnel at Detention Site Black, the chief of base wrote, "I am concerned at what appears to be a lack of resolve at headquarters to deploy to the field the brightest and most qualified officers for service at the detention site. Over the course of the last year, the quality of personnel, debriefers, and security protective officers has declined significantly. With regard to debriefers, most are mediocre, a handful are exceptional, and more than a few are basically incompetent. From what we can determine, there is no established methodology as to the selection of debriefers. Rather than look for their best, managers seem to be selecting either problem, underperforming officers, new, totally inexperienced officers, or whomever seems to be willing and able to deploy at any given time. We see no evidence that thought is being given to deploying an A-team. The result, quite naturally, is the production of mediocre, or I dare say, useless intelligence. We have seen a similar deterioration in the quality of the security personnel deployed to the site. If this program truly does represent one of the agency's most secret activities, then it defies logic why inexperienced, marginal, underperforming, and/or officers with potentially significant counterintelligence problems are permitted to deploy to the site. It is also important that we immediately enact some form of rigorous training program." A CIA OIG audit completed in June 2006 found that personnel assigned to CIA-controlled detention facilities, for the most part, complied with the standards and guidelines in carrying out their duties and responsibilities. The OIG also found that, except for the shortage of debriefers, the facilities were staffed with sufficient numbers and types of personnel. The lack of debriefers, however, was described as an ongoing problem for the program. According to the audit, there were extended periods in 2005 when the CIA's detention site Orange in Country Redacted had either one or no debriefers. At least twice in the summer of 2005, the chief of station in that country requested additional debriefers, warning that intelligence collection could suffer. Months later, in January 2006, the chief of base at the detention site advised CIA headquarters that the facility still lacked debriefers to support intelligence collection requirements, that critical requirements were stacking up, and that gaps in the debriefing of detainees were impacting the quantity and quality of intelligence reporting and would make the work of future debriefers more difficult.
Note 873. As further described in the committee study, the Inspector General audit described how the CIA's detention facilities were not equipped to provide detainees with medical care. The audit described unhygienic food preparation, including at a facility with a rodent infestation, and noted that a physician assistant attributed symptoms of acute gastrointestinal illness and giardiasis experienced by 6 staff and a detainee to food and water contamination. The audit further identified insufficient guidelines covering possible detainee escape or the death of a detainee.
M. Legal and operational challenges in 2005. 1. Department of Justice renews approval for the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques in May 2005. On May 10, 2005, the new Acting Assistant Attorney General for the OLC, Stephen Bradbury, issued 2 legal memoranda. The first analyzed whether the individual use of the CIA's 13 enhanced interrogation techniques, including waterboarding, as well as a number of interrogation techniques that had been used in 2003 and 2004, but had not been analyzed in the original August 1, 2002 OLC memorandum, were consistent with the criminal prohibition on torture. The second memorandum considered the combined use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Both legal memoranda concluded that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques did not violate the torture statute. On May 26, 2005, the CIA Inspector General, who had been provided with the 2 OLC memoranda, wrote a memo to the CIA director recommending that the CIA seek additional legal guidance on whether the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques and conditions of confinement met the standard under Article 16 of the Convention Against Torture. The Inspector General noted that a strong case can be made that the agency's authorized interrogation techniques are the kinds of actions that Article 16 undertakes to prevent, adding that the use of the waterboard may be cruel and extended detention with no clothing could be considered degrading in most cultures, particularly Muslim. The Inspector General further urged that the analysis of conditions was equally important, noting that the Inspector General's staff had found a number of instances of detainee treatment which arguably violate the prohibition on cruel, inhuman, and/or degrading treatment. On May 30, 2005, a third OLC memorandum examining U.S. obligations under the Convention Against Torture was completed. The conclusions in this opinion were based largely on the CIA's representations about the effectiveness of the CIA interrogation program in obtaining unique and otherwise unavailable actionable intelligence. As described later in this summary and in more detail in Volume 2, the CIA's effectiveness representations were almost entirely inaccurate. 2. Abu Faraj al-Libi subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques prior to Department of Justice